Well, welcome to Saffron Planet. We have three honoured guests, Norman and Garby, who you've heard before, no doubt. And we welcome for the first time Moira.
Yay!
Hi there.
Hello, Moira. Okay. We're just going to have a sort of testimony type, sort of biography type thing today, where we're going to be the thing that connects you three together. Are the fact that you're Gentiles of a certain age.
Young.
And but one thing that unites you is the work that you do and the thoughts that you have about Israel and the Jewish people, which is, even in the Christian world, quite unique and in many ways a minority position, particularly in this country. And there are many people out there that would want to know what motivates you, what makes you tick. Why, as Christians, do you feel that you want to align yourself with Israel and the Jewish people, to be a part of a messianic fellowship and to go to, say, demonstrations outside the Israeli embassy and wrap yourself with a flag and shout. And you know, and you're not the only ones. There are, you know, it's still a minority in this country, but there are plenty of Gentiles who are similar to yourselves. So we thought, if I just pick these three people and find out, you know, what exactly makes them tick. So who wants to start?
You.
Do you want Garby?
Okay.
Because yours may be even more interesting because you're from a German background, which for some people would find quite intriguing as well.
So, yes, you're quite right. I'm from Germany. And interestingly enough, I've always had an interest regarding Jewish people. I didn't have a lot of understanding when I was young because it wasn't really talked much at home. But praise be to God, I had a mother who did at least have a
was it a Christian family?
No, not really, Catholic. But my mum and father always maintained they never knew what really happened in Germany. So I didn't actually know, whilst I was living in Germany, that six million Jewish people were killed.
So they were of that generation who were around in the 30s, 40s.
And I could never understand. I could never understand, as I said, coming from a Catholic background, and nothing much would ever be said if I did ask, why did 6 million Jewish people die? Well, I didn't know about the number, but why did they have to die such a horrible death? It was always, well, you know, they kind of killed Jesus, blah, blah, blah. And for me, it was always, well, if God is so loving, I can't accept that 2,000 years later, God will still punish his people to what happened 2,000 years before. So it was always a big question with me. And then
that was also the other thing, wasn't it? Our first church where we became Christians. Yeah. That's what the pastor said. It's very interesting.
Southern
this
Baptist
was a Southern Baptist church. Yeah. And I mean, he was
a Southern Baptist, that's an American
one. It's an American one, but he was a freelance, wasn't he? And he came over to Suffolk and he worked with people from the American Air Base. But, I mean, he was born again, and no problem about that at all. But we posed that question to him about the Jewish people, and he believed that the Jewish people had had it. And we took it from there, really, didn't we?
And it wasn't really until we went both to Bible College, Norman and I went to Bible College, Alien Bible College, and David Paulson came one day to share, and it just really overwhelmed me, you know, the things he shared. And but one thing I've always said so afterwards and still maintain, one of the reasons I'm really looking at things and reading things and so on is, you know, my parents pleaded ignorance, that they didn't know what was going on, and I do believe them. But I do not want to be accused of that, so I want to know exactly what is going on. That's one of the reasons why I've kind of become, and of course, being a believer, you know, in the Lord, I then the Lord really opened my eyes. And I have to remember when I went to the first Prayer for Israel conference, Lance Lambert spoke. And since I've become a Christian, it was always really on my heart, really aching in my heart, thinking that these poor people had been so persecuted in Germany. And of course, I learned a little bit more as well, not only in Germany, but what they went through in the gas chamber. And it broke my heart when I was thinking that when I heard that, you know, they would kind of go to hell because they didn't know Jesus. And it wasn't until Lance Lambert gave a prophetic word in 86 saying that he was, and I think it's in Isaiah where it says, in all the affliction he was afflicted, and his own arm saved him. And he said, God, Jesus was with the Jewish people in the gas chambers. And it just kind of comforted me that they were not alone, that God was with them there. So
what was interesting is that since you had your, say, revelation about the Jewish people, it wasn't like, I mean, people like Christians have their perhaps revelations about certain things, but in your case, that revelation sort of informed your life from then onwards. And not everyone goes to Lance Lambert conferences. No. So obviously you felt you had to be an activist on this issue.
I didn't know. I didn't even know. I didn't even know until then. I've never heard of Lance Lambert before. I mean, I didn't know about Prayer for Israel conference. I can't even remember how I came to be there, you know. But it's just really, I just found that really awesome. And also what David Pawson had shared, you know, and just really felt, I mean, yeah, God really opened my heart.
So this information, it wasn't just information for information's sake. It motivated you into action. You had to act on that information. Yes. And it's been with you ever since.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I don't think we push ourselves, though, do we? I mean, this is the Lord kind of working in us, giving us a desire to, you know, to want to do these things.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people say, well, that's your calling type of thing, don't they?
That's right.
But, I mean, it's just like the gospel. Unless people are prepared to listen, keep their ears open and allow somebody to explain things and ask questions. Same thing with Israel. A lot of people just say, well, that's not for me type of thing. Yeah. And they don't want to be informed. They don't even allow the Bible, if you like, to inform them.
Yeah.
They're not ready to receive a revelation.
So some people have their ears closed on this issue.
Yeah.
And you're saying that, you know, once your ear's been opened, you just can't ignore it.
That's right. Yeah.
And so your stories are very similar. What about Moira then? When did you first get into it? I mean, you've got interesting stories.
Yeah. Well,
the short version.
Short version, yeah. I'm not very good at being short, but yeah.
Well, we will interrupt where necessary.
Well, I was brought up in a Christian home, was born again just after I left teacher training college, basically. Lived in Germany for 6 years with my late husband teaching. And that was in the 70s. And that was, I've always been interested in Jewish people and Israel. I can't say any more than that. But it was interesting being in Germany in the 70s because that was the time when people were getting to grips with the Holocaust. They were becoming more open about it. So that interested us. We did a lot of travel.
Was that churches or people?
No. I did go to a church, but nothing in the church. No, that was generally in society. And on our travels, we visited Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen and various places on the continent. But it was it was when my husband died, which was in 1995, and I basically said to the Lord. And it had been a very stressful time. And I was very tired and I retired from teaching. And I basically said to the Lord, OK, over to you. What do you want me to do apart from bring up my daughter, who was then 10? And my story goes from there, really. The Lord gave me a picture of nothing, me standing in the middle of a desert, basically. And it went from there. So to give a short version, I did a course at Pilgrim's Hall, which was called Truth, Deception and Grace. I've never done a course like that.
Was that with Chris Hill then?
It was John Martin.
Right.
I think Chris Hill had just left, but it was run by Pilgrim's Hall. It just intrigued me, really. So, and while we were there, we had to write a dissertation. Hadn't a clue what I was going to do it on. And I really shrank from doing that. I really just didn't want to do anything academic. But I happened, in inverted commas, to be sitting next to a lady who had a lot to do with Ebenezer. Never heard about it before.
What's Ebenezer?
Ebenezer Emergency Fund, which enables Jewish people to make aliyah. At the time, they were coming back from the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union. And she told me she prayed for Israel. And to me, that was a totally alien concept. You prayed for people. You didn't pray for places. But anyway, during that year, I also, once when I was visiting a bookshop, a book literally dropped from the shelf. And it was Gustav Scheller's story about Operation Exodus from Ebenezer. And I read that and, boy, that really impacted me. It was still very new. Anyway, the Lord showed me to write my dissertation on God's purposes for the Jews. Now, I really had no idea. So I got lots of books, read about it. I remember going into the bookshop and asking for a book on replacement theology. Mm. And everyone just looked at me because then it wasn't really labelled as that.
Probably because it was just the mainstream view.
Absolutely. And I'd been brought up with that view. Yeah. I mean, Israel, I hadn't been brought up with anything about Israel. It wasn't an issue. That's all I can say. But I did go to a conference run by Ebenezer. And that's where I first heard Lance Lambert. And I just can't say how much it blew my brain away. It really did. And it was then, I suppose God opened my heart then, and it was then that I had a huge desire to bring that back to my church. I had no idea it would be a controversial subject. To me, it was just something I'd heard. It was brilliant. And if people from Brentwood don't go to these conferences, then I must bring it to them. And that's really how it started. But I can't...
That's when you realised that this view of yours was not a mainstream view.
I don't think I even realised that. Well, it just wasn't an issue. Mm. But to me, because it was so real, it was impacting people in the Soviet Union, it was impacting Israel. I mean, it also showed me... One thing we learned on that course was, as I say, it was about truth, deception and grace. We learned about what truth was, what grace was and what deception was and how to detect it. So I also came then across people who didn't want to know the truth. They weren't open to new things. They wanted to go their own way. Now, I wasn't rubbishing what was happening because it was all good stuff. But this, to me, had such a bigger meaning than just my salvation. It, for me, it showed me what the world was all about, what God's story was all about. It wasn't just about people coming to know Jesus. Of course, that is most important. But it came through Jesus, and he was a Jew. Something that, you know, people even today sort of look at you a bit when you say that. We all know it, but it doesn't sort of go deeper.
It's always seen as a fringe issue, but you're saying it's, you know, it's part of the backstory of Jesus. You need to know his Jewish background.
It's the core of the whole story, isn't it? Yeah. And God hasn't finished with the Jewish people. And what is happening today is actually part of what he said would happen in the Old Testament. So I've sort of read those things again and they just came alive. But I've just, all I can say is, you know, I mean, the things that I do and now I hold meetings. I mean, I came into touch with Christian Friends of Israel. What I was doing was basically what a rep does. But I wasn't a rep. But one of the directors said to me one day, Moira, for goodness sake, why don't you just become a rep? You're doing the job. Become one of us. So I did. And it gave me that covering. I wasn't just a loose canon. Yeah. And that was important. And I had already held a couple of meetings in Brentwood. On the whole, people voted with their feet and didn't come. But since then, I've held a lot of meetings because I'm very passionate about bringing it to Brentwood, really. Yeah. But anybody else as well. Yeah. But what really bothers me today, and one thing that did bother me then, was the issue of revision of history. To me, history was history. Yeah. What happened, happened. Facts are facts. And it's taken me many years to get my head around the fact that people have twisted facts to the point that the proverbial big lie that I think Goebbels mention has become truth. And we know when we meet people on the streets and or wherever, people just do not want to know. They don't want to go back into history.
So basically it's the case if you tell a lie enough times, people start thinking it's the truth.
And I'm talking about intelligent people. I'm talking about people high up in churches. And it still amazes me because I can listen to the news on the BBC and think, that sounds plausible.
And you're just talking about, you know, recent history, you know, stuff that goes back to the 40s, which, you know, is in the history books and people just don't want to know or confused by it or don't wish to know for other reasons. And we're saying that a Christian should always seek the truth, historical truth as well as biblical truth, you know. And that's part of what you're doing is just to ram it down people's throats, isn't it, really?
Yes.
To embarrass them if necessary.
That is really hard.
Because you're quite an activist in some ways.
I am an activist, and people look at me and think Israel, and some shrink from that. Yeah, I know that.
We've seen her on YouTube, wrapped yourself around the Israeli flag outside, was it the Israeli embassy? I don't know.
But the thing is,
one or two, maybe.
That it's a passion that God has put in my heart. It's not me deciding, oh, this is my calling in life. It's evolved, and it's something that God has put on my heart.
In and through you, isn't
absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I
right.
can't get away from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the sad thing is, other Christians, and we're talking about true Christians here, born again believers, they can become very hostile when you talk about these things. Mm. And the thing is, many of these Christians know you. They know your background. They know where you're coming from, but they shut off. Mm. That's what I can't get my head around. Why they become so hostile, or suddenly say, "I've got to disappear, I've got to go," and or we get criticised for being over the top.
Absolutely.
Don't we?
Do you think this is a deeper problem with them?
I think it's a fear of it, almost as if it's as if their salvation is being taken away. Mm. That's the sense I seem to be getting. You know that salvation is being threatened. That suddenly Israel is taking, well, because Israel is taking, you know, the main God still loves Israel, so the church. Actually, it's actually quite understanding, I think, you know, because you know, the church is now the new Israel.
Yeah.
The church is going to do the blessing.
So they feel threatened. Feel that somehow God is going back to the Jews and ignoring the Gentiles, maybe.
I also wonder if it's a little bit of anti-Semitism. Now, I do not like to use that word, because if you use it to Christians, they hate you for it. But you are allowed to have a passion in today's church for evangelism in China, Africa, Russia, anywhere in the world. But Israel, no-go area. Yeah.
No, I think it's quite good for you to mention that word. That word is very important, and it probably... I mean, Garby, you mentioned this fear is perhaps a factor in their attitude. But I think what Moira said is also as big a fear is that there is this anti-Semitism that is in people, and they don't know it's there.
Yeah.
And it's not condemning people, it's just making them aware of it.
Yeah. Mm.
And what you're doing is you're an irritant, you're irritating them, but you're making them uncomfortable, which is why they come back to you in a negative way. But they're feeling uncomfortable. And if you keep digging deep, you'll find something in their past or in their attitude that's not right. So you have to keep doing what you're doing, you know. So
and even some people who really do know the truth about Israel are very loath to speak out in a church. I mean, I have stood alone in many occasions, put my head above the parapet, and I haven't had the support maybe from where I thought I might have had it.
I think it might also be perhaps spoke to me. I went to a conference earlier this year, an intercessory conference, with Jack Cohen. And what he was saying is perhaps one of the reasons is people perceive that you almost glorify Israel more. I mean, what you're saying about anti-Semitism is absolutely right. But perhaps because we seem to be pushing Israel all the time, you know, and of course people have said to me, oh yeah, in your eyes Israel can do no wrong, you know, which is absolutely untrue. But perhaps if you would bring and say, well, actually, God's purpose is he wants his name to uplift it and glorify it, and he will do it through Israel. That's what his word states. You only have to look in Ezekiel 36, where God says, I'm not doing it for your sake because of your stiff-neckedness and goodness knows what. But he said, I'm doing it for the sake of my holy name. And all through the Old Testament, he constantly says it's because of his holy name, because he wants to see the nations to see his name, not Israel, but his name. And perhaps where we have made perhaps a mistake is that we've so brought Israel all the time along that we perhaps have not brought God into that picture enough, perhaps.
Because people think you're siding with the political Israel, and that tends to be what... If they want to hit you with something, it'll be that. They'll say, that means you condone everything that the government are doing in Israel. Absolutely. And that's what they think.
Yeah.
They don't realise that you're coming from a spiritual background, not a political background.
That's right.
And
on the other hand, when so many lies are spoken almost every day on the news, like occupied land and all that sort of thing. When it comes up, we can't remain silent. No. I mean, I know people think I'm a political activist, but I just want to bring the truth. Yes, it's occupied, but it's occupied by the rightful occupiers, Israel.
But it is interesting, isn't it? Because it has really started with 19... I mean, when you think this lie, it's only been really promoted since 1964 when Yasser Arafat declared, you know, that the Palestinians said before there wasn't really a question.
Before it was the West Bank.
You know,
and
that's
all that,
it.
Yeah.
And the and what I was learning though the other day is that in the UN until 1974, it was a fairly balanced the attitude regarding Israel. I mean, that's always been a bit of it from the Arabs. But then the Russians joined, and they built a bloc with the Arabs. And from that moment on, the picture completely changed.
It? Because there's actually nothing that connects them apart from a hatred of Israel. You've got, you know, secular, you know, sort of left-wing, you know, and Muslims together. How would they? But you find that now. In the world, you get sort of peace activists from the left siding with Muslim fundamentalists because they both hate Israel for different reasons. And you just got to look at that and realise that there is something deeper in this conflict than politics.
Is this a kind of human hatred, or is it, would you say, a demonic hatred?
I think so. When I say deeper, I mean spiritually.
There is
something going on.
Yeah. I mean, this reminds me of the European Song Contest, you know. I mean, back in the early days, if a song was good, it would be voted, wouldn't it? Yeah. You know, but when you've got all these other countries, let's say the Eastern Bloc countries, I mean, you know that they might give United Kingdom Royaume-Uni 1 point, but the likelihood is that they're going to give, you know, the points to neighbouring
nations. That's why England has done badly in the last few years.
But I mean, the United Nations, of all the nations, I mean, Israel is not going to get a fair hearing, is it? But we are living in those end times. Yeah. And that's another little thing. I mean, a lot of Christians don't want to know about this, do they? Type of thing. They've got this idea that life will continue as it's been going on, but watch out, Britain. You know, this economic recession is, I don't like to even think about it, it's going to affect me as well, but things are going to get worse. Jesus cannot return home, we're told, can he? Until Israel's back in its land.
We'll be discussing that a bit later.
Oh, will we? I look forward to that.
I think the purpose of this is just to, in a way, for you three to introduce yourselves and people to get an understanding of their motivations, which I believe they have now, so if we can sort of close it down now and carry on a bit later, and we'll go deeper. So goodbye for now.
Will we be talking about the European Song Contest anymore?
Yeah, that as well. It's very important. Okay. Thank you.